everybody, and welcome to episode 570 of Video Game Apocalypse. I'm your host, Michael Raparez, coming to you from the Doug DeFreitas Memorial Studio of the Airwaves. If you want it to be the Your Name Here Memorial Studio of the Airwaves, go to patreon.com/lasertime and join us at the $20 level, or join us at the $5 level if you want access to bonus shows. Who's joining me now?
Oh, baby needs a new war bond, Chris Antista. Right when the time you're hearing this, the Helldivers' new war bond will be one day old, and I can't wait.
And
unfortunately not raptured during the eclipse, Matthew Allen.
Aw, shucks. And special guest.
It's me, Brendan Hesse. I am now officially full-time at GameSpot.
Yeah, you're officially Brendan Hesse. You weren't Brendan Hesse before. That's true. Now officially you.
He's legitimate. Yep. He's bona fide.
Yep. I also have a YouTube channel called The Crawl, which is going to come up, I think, a little bit on this episode.
Oh.
Could be. Is there anything else you'd like to plug here at the top of the show where people can hear it?
Nope. No, that's nothing. Well, I guess so. So on The Crawl, there's a video called How Metroid Saved the Galaxy, which is a full-length documentary I did last year. Actually, it'll be a year to the day this episode goes. That's pretty exciting. Go check that out.
Yeah, that's actually why I reached out to you immediately, because, like, well, Brendan likes Metroids and, by extension, Vanias. So
I read those stories, Brendan. That was not nice, inviting Mark Summers to speak in the documentary and then pulling the bait and switch on him before it aired. That was not.
I understood that reference. I'm proud to announce, because of 302010, it is very coincidentally the 30th anniversary of all of that, in addition to the 30th anniversary of Super Metroid. Two things I don't associate coming out at the exact same time. Because one I was super into, and one I was a little too old for.
Yeah, lots of us were too old for Super Metroid. Yeah.
Stop it. Stop it. If I was doing an article on it this or last week, I forget. 302010's a beast. How Super Metroid saved Metroid. Because that was a really clunky series, in my opinion, that may not have moved forward without one big, gigantic blast to our psyche. That was Super Metroid. So good.
I remember, like, that was my birthday that year. That might be, like, one of the only birthday presents I really strongly remember. Because two of my friends, like, we were all poor teenagers, you know, middle class, but, like, not much disposable income between us. Two of my friends teamed up to pool their money to buy a used copy of Super Metroid. And it just floored me immediately, like, oh my god, this is amazing. Nobody but my parents has ever given me a video game before.
Right. No, I think it took me way. I don't think until we were pirating games, any of my friends gave me a fucking game.
Yeah. So that was an amazing memory. But yes, so 30 years ago this week, and I forget which one of us came up with the idea of, like, let's just do Metroidvanias. And guess what? We've already done a top five about Metroidvanias, like 300-something episodes ago.
Of course, yeah, that's probably one of the first. That's...
But we can... There have been a lot of Metroidvanias that have come out since then. We can do our special debate format to add some flavor to this.
And this is how you know Brennan's a regular. Mm-hmm. Is he gets invited to the special debate format. Not everybody makes this cut, man. This means he can hang
it's my second
in the
debate.
Room. That means he has a chance of getting my back, teaming up, and pushing our entries through. Right, Brendan? Right, Brendan?
There's a very strong chance, based upon some of the stuff I saw in the notes. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, okay. Sneaking a peek at Matt's notes. He sent them around to all of us. I kept mine private. I've got a huge list of things. There's rules. We can only introduce five each, unless, of course, someone else swipes one that we were going to talk about.
I only have three.
That's why I have backups. Backups for the swipe ones. Right. And didn't we also make a rule, 2D or 2.5D only, exactly. No 3D? Yeah.
My three are that strong. But, like, they're either going up, or you all have them, or fuck you.
Fair enough. I appreciate the hedging your bets there.
Do you want me to start it off?
Sure, yeah, let's just jump into it. Why not?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Super Metroid. Suck it.
Yeah, that's... I guess that's the no-brainer. Like, that has to be on
the
list.
Dawn, you swiped my first one, Chris.
Super
I didn't see
Metroid.
That coming.
It's incredibly colorful. I remember the second I got that mini SNES out, and I went through this, and like, Mario World's fun. I played that. Super Metroid, sat down, played it until I couldn't keep my eyes open anymore, because it still looks and sounds amazing. It's incredible. Part of My mild issues with a lot of Metroidvanias, you are required to innovate a lot over a 30-year-old game, and I find even 7-8 Metroidvanias don't enhance the experience of Super Metroid very much. Even some I see on your list. And I would argue
that I don't think it really happened until like the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
I would argue. So if you go to like the Metroidvania subreddit, boy, you will see people arguing over the definition of a Metroidvania.
What? Sure.
Should we talk about that?
It's actually good that you didn't let me like include 3D ones, because I'd be sitting here and be like, yeah, guys, System Shock 1, yeah. Right?
Arkham Asylum, man.
So I think this is one, it wasn't even on my list because it's like, duh. But like, it's definitely, by modern definitions, it's mostly a Metroidvania. I think what it's missing, so it has the thing where you need to get certain powers or abilities to unlock a giant explorable map and go places you couldn't before, and there's a lot of backtracking.
Yeah. You're exploring, you find new tools, let you open new doors, and along the way, there's backtracking because you saw doors that can be opened by the street.
It ain't no Metroidvania without a colored map.
Yeah.
Well, there's that, but I think the part it's sort of missing, and I don't think it disqualifies it, but like, can I go with the second most obvious entry that I think added to the formula that has since become standard? Symphony of the Night.
There's my
added RPG upgrade type mechanics to that formula.
So here's the thing. Okay. There are two distinct branches of Metroidvanias. And I think that the reason someone would argue that is simply because so many indie Metroidvanias go for the Castlevania Symphony of the Night style.
Yep.
Very few go for the Metroid style. And that doesn't mean that it's less of a Metroidvania. It just means that there are fewer Metroid-likes in that umbrella. Because the thing that makes a Metroidvania, the number one thing, is a non-linear contiguous map where exploration is gated by abilities, not specifically by keys. Because otherwise we could sit here and be like, Resident Evil 2 is a Metroidvania, but you're only getting keys and items. Mm, it's not really a Metroidvania. Same thing with Dark Souls.
Yeah, yeah. People will say key is not the same. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that the fact that Super Metroid absolutely, I had no idea there was any debate of that. I think it's like absolutely a Metroidvania, not just because it like is the namesake of the genre, one of the two namesakes of the genre, but like it's ability gated contiguous map.
Yeah. I think the only debate with both of these is like, is that the best entry in the series? Like, has Super Metroid really maybe good. Been surpassed by Zero Mission or Samus Returns or even A2 or AM2R, another Metroid 2 remake, which I played for the first time.
Ass to Mouth remake.
No, I played it for the first time last night, and it's like, it feels a lot like Super Metroid, but it's like twice as fast. It's immediately accessible and fun, much like Castlevania Aria of Sorrow, which I think is the actual best Metroidvania Castlevania.
Mm, I've played Symphony of the Night so many fucking times.
Yeah,
you see the smile on my face, Michael? Mm-hmm. You fucking fell into my trap because my desire was for the Aria of Sorrow to actually make the list.
I don't see how that's your trap, because it's, you know, it's a mutual trap.
Because I knew someone would go, well, Symphony of the Night, but then this one, and I'm like, yes, I secretly
I
tried.
I did my shittiest version of a hot take on 302010. Castlevania is lucky I like it. Because instead of being a Metroidvania, that shit is a Metroid-like. Like, that's what Metroid is. Castlevania stole Metroid's formula, and we tend to lump it in like they came up with it together. No, it didn't.
Nope.
Castlevania took it.
But it did it so well. And these were like the only two exemplars of that formula for a while that it just became Metroidvania or Castletroid if you're contrarian.
What's really interesting is that you talked to like the developers and they were like, actually, we were more inspired by Zelda than we were Super Metroid. And that was bullshit. Like,
yeah.
the map's the exact same thing.
Say whatever
but like, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm trying to decide between the two. And I think that I do think that probably Aria wins because it is a more fleshed out game. It's a bit more fun to play in its controls and whatnot. And I also had Ecclesia, Order of Ecclesia on my list.
Sure.
But I think I'm going to actually like retroactively like strike my own from the list, because I think that's more of a Castlevania 2 successor than sure. it is actually a Metroidvania.
Some more linear, so, just straight up Castlevania. Yeah, and you're like shit.
Doing different stuff in different smaller contained maps rather than like a fully contiguous
but
thing.
Here's my argument for Aria. So I played a little bit of both of these, both Aria and Symphony last night. Symphony feels a bit heavier. It's a much more fully featured RPG. I think like it's a big yes. game with a lot of stuff to find, yeah. a lot of abilities to use. Aria of Sorrow is like, it might be close to a perfect game. It is very compact. It is fast. It is very easy to understand. And just a really well-designed Metroidvania. I remember I played through it a couple years ago, and what I came away from that saying was like, this game has no fat on it. Like it is just a lean, near perfect experience.
I can't disagree. I mean, the reason is because it was made for handhelds. It couldn't have fat on it. Like the PlayStation, right. you know, Symphony of the Night could. Symphony of the Night, I love the RPG stuff there, the depth, the variety of weapons and stuff like that.
It's a more lavish
like,
game for sure.
For sure. And the fact that it's just like the whole secret with like, you get twice the game because you have to explore the upside down. But like, yeah, I would go for either of these. I'm going to go ahead and preemptively remove a title from my list that it's just a spiritual successor. Like, so Bloodstained Symphony of the Night, or I'm sorry, Bloodstained, what's the full title of that game? Not Curse of the Moon, that's
Ritual
the...
Ritual of the Thing.
Yeah. Ritual of the Night.
Ritual of the Night. So that's the one that I'm like, well, it's just a very pretty modern take on the Symphony of the Night.
Is it pretty,
formula.
Though?
I like a lot of games, of modern games, there are sort of two waves of people and with that have different opinions on this game. It's because over time they made Bloodstained like a really, really, really good game with updates, and it took like a year and a half. Like if you go play like the final version of Bloodstained, that shit is excellent, right?
Really?
But
okay.
So I don't know what the game was like at launch, but I kind of everyone I know who played it at launch is like, it was fine, and I'm like, you
I
should
don't
go
know
play
that
what
I played
it
at
now.
Launch, but it is one of the something Metroidvanias are usually never are buggy. And, like, getting stuck in walls and shit. Like, that happened a lot in Bloodstained for me.
None of that happened to me by the time I was playing
it. I did play a little bit of it last night, and I booted it up, and my save was, like, from July 2019. I'm like, oh, the before times. This is almost like a holy relic. I don't want to save over this.
Yeah, no shit.
It would be like a piece of me died.
Yeah, Trump's still president in this game. Love it. Love it.
Brendan, anyway. You want to suggest one?
Yes. So, okay.
Wait, hold on. Before the, can we just, off the top, let's just say Aria Sorrow is our Castlevania entry in here. Just
I think that that's safe. I don't. Right. I can't, I would not want to argue for any of the others.
I don't
like,
have
I like
any more
a lot of Castlevania games, but yeah, okay. I think
I prefer Portrait of Ruin. Whatever.
Michael, do you have any other Castlevania entries, or can we
that,
lock
that
in
that was
Aria
my
Sorrow?
One Castlevania entry.
I think I'm
okay,
comfortable
well,
with that.
Well, so in the spirit of that, I think that the only Metroid game that I personally think holds any sort of punching weight with Super is Metroid Dread. And the reason I feel that way is I actually prefer Super, but the reason I'm putting Dread up is because that game feels so good, dude. The movement in that game, the way that Samus just slides and the double jump, the aiming, the melee counter, all of it, it's so fluid.
The boss fights don't hold a... They're so much better than anything Super Metroid could ever have done.
They are absolutely so much better. Yeah. And, like, I prefer... So, like, the reason I love Metroidvanias is because I like to explore. I like the navigation. And I do think that Super is better at that than Dread, because when you play Dread enough times, and I've played it, I think, 8 times, maybe 9 times
wow.
through.
Wow.
And, I mean, these are games, like, I don't...
That's 7.5 times
I don't
want to
tell you how
me.
Many times I've played... I don't want to tell you how many times I've played Zero Mission. I play that game in, like, I can do, like, a 2.5 hour run of that game. I play it, like, twice a year. I'm probably in, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 times. Like, but with Dread, you go through it enough times, you really see that, like, it does
law.
Funnel you in ways that... You know, I don't think are wrong or bad or anything. I just prefer what Super does. So, I don't know. That anyway. Long story short is, I think that's the only game that could feasibly be on this list other than Super, even though I frankly probably would pick Super.
I mean, I would put it up there if they, maybe the developers, the shooting at every block horseshit. As if yeah, it's 30
I was going to say, like, that's the Holy one Lord. Sticking point. Like, the
it's
game,
just random guessing.
The game feels amazing. I was completely hooked on it. I loved it. But then, yeah, it does pull that
mercilessly
shit of, like,
lost in a way I can't look up at all.
Yeah, there,
in
there
a
are
modern game.
Places where, like, the critical path goes through fairly difficult to find and access, like, hidden areas. Like, I think there's the one that I always remember is, like, there's, like, a block that you have to bomb, like, halfway up a shaft filled with water, and it's really hard to find the exact right place, and you need to get through that in order to continue the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I encountered that more than once. Like, it was a random block I had to shoot with zero indication, no map indication. I didn't like that. I didn't like the idea that I had to be constantly firing at the blocks as I was moving through Metroid
so
Dread.
The thing is the way that game's designed is if you're stuck, you need to just look at the last place you got an upgrade and then look at the nearest areas around, because there will be a they make it very close as to where you're supposed to go. Whereas, like, in Super, sometimes you have to go to, like, two or three areas across.
I
and
still
that
get stuck
of,
in Super, and but, I played that game a ton of times, and it can be frustrating too.
I feel like with Dread, some of the aesthetic choices they made actually hindered progress. Like, it was overly dark in some areas, and then with the hidden, which block do I shoot? I don't know. I can't fucking see half the screen. It's meant to be Dread and dark, but I was just like, it's fine.
And then you had those bits where the robots were chasing you, and it's like, oh, now it's a horror game for this area.
Yep. So, I mean, if that's the case, it sounds like we're all probably going to go for Super. So that was the only other Metroid that I wanted to put forward.
It's a good pull. I say put it on the list and maybe revisit
it. I'll put it on the list, but here, bear in mind, Brendan, it's Super Metroid's birthday. You want to do this on Super Metroid's birthday?
I mean, it's my second favorite Metroid. I'm going to pick Super if we're going
to. It is so wonderful every time I pick it up.
Well, why don't you go with your number two choice there, Chris, Mr. Birthday Boy?
My number two choice? Well, I really had Symphony because I was just going through the greatest.
Ah, okay.
And I just got out of a podcast. I want to put something new in there. I want to put Prince of Persia, whatever the new one's called.
I don't have to nominate it. Yep, I was going to say, okay. Metroid Dread.
Neither do I.
its movement and combat, I think, have been surpassed in a Metroidvania only by Prince of Persia, the Lost Crown.
I don't think everybody made a Metroidvania, and almost all of them involve shooting. And some have had pretty good traversal, none as puzzle oriented as Prince of Persia, and nothing can hold a candle to its combat. Its timing, its combat, its parry system, it's fucking beautiful. And it's surprisingly done with such, usually that kind of gameplay is done with a much larger character on screen.
And I want it noted that Chris is saying this, not me, the Ubisoft employee.
This is all the shit I said when the game came out. Like, it is still the best game I played this year. It is, I think, the biggest evolution. Helldivers isn't done yet, baby. I don't have that war bond.
That's true. Yeah.
Sorry,
thought the automatons were gone. They fucking just reappeared with a new invasion.
Looks like bots are back on the menu, boys. Like, it's incredible. I was playing with Helldivers with a child today. He's like, we can't wait for that war bond. Like, oh, the community manager's just fucking this game up. I'm like, what? And then I went and go look, and like, everybody thought the automatons were gone for good. What? You took the automatons away? Like, it's a war effort. They retreated, you
of
dumb
course,
fuck.
Of
stop
course
screaming.
That, yeah.
It was less than 24 hours, and they're screaming at these devs. Holy shit.
And blaming it on the community manager.
Yeah, it's all the CM's fault.
Are you sure they weren't referring to the fact that a lot of people are attacking the community manager?
Yeah, I think it's probably part of that Gamergate 2 bullshit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, we don't have to talk about that.
So Prince of Persia, I would be the only... I don't disagree that Prince of Persia, obviously, great game. I'll just play Devil's Advocate. For me personally, one of my definitions of great Metroidvania is, like, they just hook me and I can't play anything else until I finish them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't... There were so many good games around that time that I got distracted.
Oh, Matt, you're breaking my heart.
I'm sorry. Again, it's making the list. Three of the four of us are strong advocates for this game, so of course it'll make the list. But
I did completely fall into it a couple of times. So
I just wanted to transition. So mine here's a good example of a game that, like, I didn't hear much about in advance, and then when folks started talking about it, I picked it up. I could not put it down. I know this made the previous list, but I feel like this was sort of the modern resurgence of these games, so Shadow Complex is tough to beat when you talk top-tier Metroidvania games.
I'm so happy. I say that anecdote all the time. That was the first Microsoft Summer of Arcade where, like, we're really going to push...
Yeah.
Get this, guys. Digital games. We know the world's not on board. Ah, you don't own your games. They're not physical, but we're going to do this the whole summer. And we took a couple Shadow Complex appointments, and I just admired the dev, and he's just like, I love Super Metroid, and I wanted to do that. This is my version of Super Metroid.
Yeah, and right. At the time, it was just like, someone remembers Super Metroid? Oh, my God.
Right.
So that was something I was going to bring up.
A lot of times in professional interviews, they discourage you from bringing up another IP that you 100%. Don't
own. Yeah. And so that was something I was going to bring up, is that I remember reading about Shadow Complex and hearing about it on your old show, and it got me to play it. And because I loved Super Metroid, I loved Metroid Prime. And
Orson Scott Card fucking loves Orson Scott Card.
Yeah.
Most of his opinions just, outside of
his
work. You
guys got some ideas, I'll tell you what. I remember, and I got that game like specifically because of that coverage, and it was such a big deal because, like Matt said, it was the thing that made everyone go, oh, this type of gameplay is cool. This is fun.
Yeah.
We can do more of this. And
that gameplay had been relegated to handhelds almost exclusively.
Yeah. Well, at least only Castlevania games. Like, it was
that
just
might be sort of the negative is the game also sort of established this type or this style of game sort of belongs in the digital download only game format. Yeah. Like it kind of was like, maybe these aren't box product games anymore, which is not the case, right? There've been a few, but like it was the first, I mean, it kind of, for me, became one of the only must have Xbox Live games. Like, it's just like, everyone should play this fucking game, you know?
Dude, the things that game does, so many games don't do it even today. The shooting into the background, like, what other Metroidvania?
So
this game's like, what, 15 years old now? Like,
it used a lot of that 0.5 out of the 2.5D. Like, it wasn't just, this is just 3D models on a 2D plane. It's like, no, it's using the fact that it's in 3D, which was really fucking neat. So that was my other entry. Who's up? Michael. Brendan. Michael.
My turn?
All
right. Cave Story. Which this was a game that, like, I remember was a huge darling of the press however many years ago it came out, like 10, 15 years, something like that. And
maybe further.
It was like before like indies had really become established as like a prominent part of the gaming landscape. And I remember like, oh, you gotta play this indie game, Cave Story. It's amazing. Oh, it has so much to say. I'm like, oh, this is going to be some boring-ass art game that the usual Kotaku intelligentsia loves to ramble on about. And then I played it, and I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot.
Get me in trouble here.
I have no taste. Because this game is amazing, and I've been turning up my nose at it.
I'm sort of in a similar boat. I've never finished it, because it's fucking huge at this point. It's a pretty big game, because it's been reiterated.
It's not reiterated. That big.
I mean, but like two of my best friends who aren't on the show, it's like one of their favorite games ever, and they played it on every platform, and they can never stop talking about it. It's like older people's Undertale for in some of the communities I walk through.
That's a good way of describing it. Sure,
it's true. Oh my god, that's
by the way, Michael. Literally 20 years ago. This game's from 2004.
Well, that's the original PC version. Then it got remastered by Nicholas and ported to a bunch of platforms. And
it's got one. It's more impressive because it's got one guy at the at the wheel of everything.
Yeah, the first version was like everything was made by one guy, and I got to meet him once. Nicholas brought him by the Games Radar offices, and the thing that impressed me the most about him was like he's so tiny. Just a little,
it's like the character in the game,
Elfin Man.
Yeah, he based it off himself. Okay, so I'm gonna do the thing that Matt did in the last couple, and I'm gonna do a devil's advocate here. I like Cave Story, and I definitely think that Cave Story and Shadow Complex are maybe like those are the two games that brought everyone back into thinking about Metroidvanias.
Yeah.
I don't know I think a lot of what makes that game really good is kind of its, like Undertale, its community and its like the story of the game rather than maybe the game itself. And I, you know, we'll see if it hangs in the final five. Mm. I personally would not put it in like the top five all time Metroidvania.
I want to root for it, but there's something that I never finished it. I found it very easy to bounce off of. That does happen a lot with me with Metroidvania. I appreciate it for a little while. I'm like, I know everything this is doing.
Mm. Yeah, and it's hard to be innovative in that space. And honestly, I'm super picky about Metroidvania.
Me too.
So,
I mean, I'm kind of where you're at with it, Brendan. Like, I'm probably it's a very good game. It's not going to make the top five, I think, out of this list. There's some other heavy hitters.
Number one, it's extremely impressive for what it is, as something that was created by one person. But also, like, I admire the branching paths through that game that you don't even realize are there. Like, my first playthrough, I fucked up monumentally. I ended up, like, letting one of your helper characters drown. I didn't get her jetpack, so I couldn't do, like, certain things at the end of the game. Instead of the jetpack, I got to keep, like, a stupid mask, like a Mimiga mask that I thought was cool, but it's just like, yeah, this doesn't actually do anything. and it's always kind of stuck in my craw that, like, I should go back and try to get a good ending one of these days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, man, I will have a real hard time voting against this when it comes time to, but I will. But I do. I'm with you. I love it, and I appreciate so many things about it. But I just bounced off it so much, so many times. Because like, it's also like the one Metroidvania we talked about that isn't like super serious. It's charming. It has a different vibe to it that is a little more playful, and less end of the universe / I'm a vampire whose whole family might die.
I really liked your Undertale comparison. Like, I think that's really apt for because, like, Undertale is another game that, like, I recognize the importance of it, and I know it has a very diehard fandom. People who that's their favorite game ever. I liked the game, but it's not my favorite genre.
Like Undertale, I've been told things about the game of areas I knew very well, and like, I didn't know I could do that. I've played a lot of it, and there's so much of it I haven't seen.
Yep, it's like Fez in that regard. Like, Fez is actually a whole
I just
want
to give hats off to Michael. I guess that didn't even occur to me, and I feel like that definitely belongs in the discussion.
All right.
Yeah.
Brendan?
I'm going to throw out...
Isn't it Brendan's turn?
Oh, I think it is. You're right. Go for it, Brendan.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, okay. So, I mentioned earlier I'm very picky about Metroidvanias, and for a long time I think this was the only one that, like, I felt maybe topped Super Metroid and, like, Castlevania. And that's Hollow Knight.
Man, holy shit. Holy shit, did I have the most... I had to like break myself away from that game because of professional duties to this fucking show. I loved Hollow Knight.
Yeah, I think... obviously, there are a lot of games that I think now do... I actually think Prince of Persia is a better Hollow Knight.
Right,
because
Hollow Knight was the only thing that was like combat-focused in any way.
Exactly. And there are still things about Hollow Knight that are special and unique to Hollow Knight that no other Metroidvania quite does. But like Chris said, I couldn't pull myself away from that game. I played it so much. It was the only game. I play a lot of video games. My wife knows I play a lot of video games. It's the only video game in the entirety of our almost 10-year relationship where she said to me, "You're really playing that game a lot, huh?" So, I mean, I adore it. And it's one of those kinds of it's one of those experiences too where I almost didn't replay it because I loved my original playthrough so much. I was worried that I would go back and like shatter the illusion that it was as good as it was. But I've since replayed it twice through and I still think it's just as good as before. I think if you're not necessarily down with some of the difficulty and some of the
secrets
stuff
off my list is that it got caught up in the Dark Souls conversation because it did blend a really high level of difficulty, especially with boss fights. Like it kind of falls into the same territory to me as like Assault and Sanctuary, you know, which is like that formula, but I don't know. Like, but I know that there are diehards who love this game.
The thing. It gets so much love. I know it has such a huge devoted fan base. I've tried to get into it like 3 or 4 times, and it's just never clicked for me. Same. Like, I've never played it more than a few hours.
That's a shame. You're bad
people. Does it reveal itself as more of a Metroidvania after those initial few hours? Because
it's already
Metroidvania.
Pretty clearly
in fact,
a Metroidvania.
The type of Metroidvania that it is almost, it's shocking how many paths are open to you at all points in time. Like, you can do so many different tangents, and it's before you run into like a hard wall of like, I don't have an ability, I can't go this way. And it's a big world. It's a big game.
So you and Chris are both yeses. Michael and I are both noes on this one. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm a very big yes for Hollow Knight.
I think
I've been a very big yes for everything we've talked about.
I think
so far.
Anything
I
with two noes is probably not going to make this final list because we have so many strong.
Y'all
are we not
my
done?
My brother listens to this show too, and he's a huge Hollow Knight fan, and he's just probably shaking his head right
now. I'll say yes. Just to get it in the next round, but. Y'all can make
You can bargain with Brennan to get Cave Story in there by giving the Hollow Knight, Michael.
That's his new title, Bargaining with Brennan. That's his new column at GameSpot. Make it happen, dude.
That could happen.
Yeah.
That could happen, right? Bummer
beat. Fuck cheap ass gamer. We got Bargaining with Brennan over here. Yeah,
bargaining
I said it.
Brendan.
Dude, I got to throw this one out. I think this is going to be one of
Chris's
those.
It's Chris's turn.
All right.
Well, I don't have any. Like, I'm not nominating anymore because everything has been super strong.
Okay,
so, like, I would totally close it down.
So this is one where I feel like it's probably going to be another 2-2 situation because I know a lot of people. I think, Michael, you've said you've tried to play this and never sunk in. There are two games. I will take them as a combined entry, but if you had to make me choose one or the other, I'll probably go in the first one. So the Ori games are fucking top-notch Metroidvanias to me in terms of movement, in terms of combat, in terms of the maps, how they look. It is a playable Disney cartoon that controls
You're thinking
silky
of Dust
smooth.
Elysium Tale, and I didn't nominate it. Didn't nominate it because it's just a pretty...
I forgot about that game.
Right, because it's a very pretty, pretty boring Metroidvania, which is how all the Oris came off to me.
No way.
I loved the first
games.
Ori, but yeah, you're right. I could never get into the second one very much. Like, it just not click with me.
They look nice. I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, okay, so you guys aren't real gamers. I fucking
know.
What?
Right?
I'm too busy playing Hollow Knight, man. Yeah. Getting good at Hollow Knight. That's my whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, love the soundtrack by Gareth Coker. But
what was the other one you were going to say, Matt? Because I saw one, I glimpsed at one of your lists that I never would have thought of, but I loved.
Well, there's one that I can drop off because it's just so derivative. I have to just give it a shout out. Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit in Wonderland.
That is 100% on my list.
I told you I don't like that name, and I'll never play it.
The name is the only thing holding that game back. It's an it's an amazing Metroidvania, but it's only thing. The other thing holding it back is it's not trying anything really new. It's pretty derivative.
It kind of is.
It's got the light, the color magic stuff, right?
Yeah, it's Ikaruga as a Metroidvania.
Yes,
like,
that's
fair.
Yeah.
The polarity changing, like, it's
that shit
so...
is dope.
Plus it does like arrow bouncing puzzles that I don't think I've ever seen
my trap.
Anywhere
I'm
else.
Happy to add that to the finalist list. I'm glad you both agree with me.
You have a weird
I just don't think
trap.
You had the passion for it that you should have gone in with it. It's a good game,
okay.
Matt.
Okay,
Matt,
fine.
He wields a lot of power by being the only one who wants to maintain this.
Talk it up, man. These are the best games ever. Don't be like, you guys aren't going to like this
one. I have some other weird Dark Horse entries that may not even classify as Metroidvania.
I like that I saw on your list you had Owlboy on there.
Please talk about Owlboy.
And Owlboy, that like just in terms Born of like this genre in general, what a beautiful game with fantastic music. I don't know that it belongs on the list. Yeah, but it's I had a great time with Owlboy, an inspired game from a very small team.
That game's like 12 years in the making or some shit like that because the dev team is so small.
I loved Owlboy.
Brendan, you have a problem with it though as a Metroidvania. You just didn't like playing it.
I think it's like a 6 out of 10 of a game. Like I think it was super flat for me. And I mean, as a Metroidvania too, like I don't know.
It didn't come in with a lot of new ideas. That's for sure.
Well, and it feels almost more like a Zelda 2, but you fly around. Like, I don't know.
It, sure. Yeah. That's why it was on my, like, it's like, does that even classify as one? Even the Reddit was arguing over that one. So, what about my other, here's my other one that's a weird non-standard Metroidvania, because it only happens after, spoiler alert, a big twist. Mm. The Messenger starts out as a Ninja Gaiden game.
Jordan Peterson's The Messenger.
And then after a big Jesus. Do your Jordan Peterson, please.
Give your fucking balls a tug and play the goddamn Messenger.
Shorzy meets Jordan Peterson?
It's the same voice. You didn't know that? You gotta be a little Canadian now. Don't be like the lobster. Give your fucking balls a tug.
I've been kicked off college campuses all around the United States. I just told them to give their balls a tug.
You want
to
talk about progressivism? I can't, because I was too busy fucking your mom last night, left the lens cap on the camera like a total amateur.
I make love to my wife every night. He's literally said that shit on like Howard Stern. It's so good. Yes. No, but The Messenger rules as a game, but only as a Metroidvania after a big plot twist and later in the game, and that's kind of what's fun about that game, I guess.
It's sort of a brilliant plot twist when it does happen, but
it's a really cool conceit for a game too. I didn't beat it. I played like maybe half of it, and I didn't drop it because I thought it was bad. I think I just, you know, fell away from it at the time. But it's a cool game, like, to go from like, hey, we're gonna be, what is it, Ninja Gaiden, and then we're gonna switch to being, or Shinobi, I guess, even, and then switch to being a Metroidvania. It's pretty cool.
I don't know if it's cool enough to hang on.
I'm glad they got shoutouts, though. They deserve shoutouts, and they're totally worth playing. Yeah. Unlike Ori. All right. Which,
all right. So here's, Ori didn't even get close. Here's where we're at.
Okay.
Did you have another one you want to nominate?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say you've nominated like three in a row now.
Okay.
But Guacamelee is also extremely good.
Metroidvanias.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Guacamelee, yeah. It's,
which one?
I guess just the first one is fine. The second one adds a lot. I never really played it very much. But the first one has a really good fighting system, has a really fun world, and it makes fun of Metroidvanias a lot.
And, yeah, it's more clever. It might be the most clever of all the entries, but that, man, I don't know that I'd ever go back and play Guacamelee again.
Yeah, I played through it once and I really liked it. I never went back to it. But I think I can't think of anything with it that I was like,
again, like, pretty flawless entry. I don't know why I'm flat on it. It just like
cool combat and like the music. I really like the music in that game.
It was like one of many highlights of the Vita's lifespan. Yeah. I remember, and then it came to other platforms.
I like that it had cool that it's got something that some Metroidvanias have, where it's kind of like you return to a town hub idea, then you talk to the citizens, and that town changes over the course of the events and what people have to say as you slowly become more and more of that luchador hero. And, I will get your back on this one, Michael. I will forge an alliance with you.
I've loved all of these except for Ori. And not that I hate Ori or anything, it's just like, it was just the prettiest Metroid, like the most inspired visual design I'd seen in a Metroidvania, but I thought the gameplay was really derivative and didn't do much new at all.
Ori didn't make the list, so why are you just rubbing it in? we already said
you didn't
Ori
work
did not
on
make...
Ori.
Brendan,
Ori's
what else
not
you
even
got?
Near the finalist list.
I would like to nominate Blasphemous 2.
Oh, all right. Interesting.
Moving on. I've never heard what?
I've never played it. I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
I think you both would really like Blasphemous 2. One of my favorite games from last year. I think the first Blasphemous is a more interesting conceptual game. Like it swerves on some of the Metroidvania stuff, where Blasphemous 2 is just a really solid Metroidvania, but it has such a the world of Blasphemous is like, it's inspired by Spanish Catholicism. And
Michael's listening.
It is like this grotesque gothic version of it. It's so cool. It's very compelling. But it's not really off-putting. It's unsettling in weird ways, but it's not like
it is if you're
like
Catholic, buddy.
Well, I mean, I've played a bit of both of those games, and my first like association with like the it has really beautiful twisted pixel art, but Yeah, I immediately associate it with, like, if you've ever been to Spain and visited its cathedrals, they have, like, some really kind of creepy statuary and, you know, icons, statues of the saints that are painted and look kind of weird and are usually behind, like, these big wrought iron gates and relics and all this other stuff. So, it's a sort of Catholicism that was very old world until about, like, you know, 200 years ago or so, like when the Inquisition was dissolved.
Even just growing up, like, I went to Catholic school for, like, until like fifth or sixth grade.
Yeah.
And
same.
Like,
you
even
imagine
that
him in
stuff.
That skirt?
What?
What?
Nothing.
I just didn't hear.
Can you imagine him in that skirt? We don't need to dwell on it. I'm not even going to
look. I rocked it. It wasn't until like my sixth grade.
That Billy Joel song is all about Brendan.
Took me a second.
Yeah. but no, it's like, you know, you've got like weird. I mean, just in the front of the church, you've got like this really highly detailed, emaciated Jesus hanging on a cross with a, like, huge 9-inch nails coming out of his hands and his feet. Mm-hmm. When you're like, you know, in your like preteen years, you're kind of like, that's kind of creepy, dude. And so, yeah, you get that same vibe from this game. Anyway, we'll talk about the actual game, though, is it's got one of the best mixes of combat and ability gating. It's kind of like a Castlevania in that it's a very melee-focused game, but it's almost more like Prince of Persia, where you're not leveling up necessarily. You're just collecting currency that you can spend on new items and new like enhancements to your health or whatever. So it threads that needle really well, which I think is cool, because like Symphony of the Night, you can just level up your way out of hard combat encounters, and it kind of subverts some of the ability-focused nature of a Metroidvania. And I think Blasphemous 2 is up there with, for me at least, Hollow Knight and Prince of Persia in terms of how you can combine those two sides of the genre really well.
Well, shit, I don't know that I've ever heard of this, but it looks amazing. It sounds amazing.
It's really cool. I mean, honestly, the fact that you like Hollow Knight, I think you would like both.
I love Hollow
the
Knight.
Blasphemous.
Yeah. You'd probably like Blasphemous.
And Dark Souls. Your appreciation for Dark Souls, I think, would also carry over.
That might be the third branch of Metroidvania we almost had that is that Dark Souls spin on the
Dark Soulsvania. Like
Hollow Knight started to go down that road.
Soulstroidvania.
Yeah. I guess every game tried to add some souls elements to it.
It's just a popular thing to lift. Like, you got a save point, you go back to it, all the monsters regenerate.
Anyone have any more entries on their lists? Michael?
Why not no to that? Give some honorable mentions, but we don't need to weed down this.
I just want to give an honorable mention to the Shantae series.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, specifically, Pirate's Curse is the one that has a lot of Metroidvania elements, because some of those games are just straight up 2D platformer, pretty linear. But Pirate's Curse is like you're constantly going back to town. It integrates the powers. Yeah.
There's several
on a regular basis. Yeah.
And the stories are always really fun and silly. But
I think we'd also be remiss not to bring up Axiom Verge 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I think I like 2's world layout a little bit better than 1. I think 1's a more classic Metroid game, so they both have their positives. I'm not sure. I think they're really cool because they were so much like a Metroid game in an era where we had no actual Metroid games. And a lot of Metroidvanias were doing the Castlevania thing. But I think just the rest of our list is a little bit stronger than those two games, but that's not to say they're bad. They're excellent. If you've never played them, I highly recommend them.
No, I remember when I finally saw the series coming back in vogue, it was Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, which is perfectly charming. One of the few games I know where you play as a flying saucer that's not a shmup. Pretty neat, but it was like it caught the Shadow Complex vibe earlier than most other indies or games that would ape the formula. Honorable mention, not nominating it.
Is that the game with like the really jaggy looking art style, like lots of block colors?
Silhouettes. Well, like everything's a silhouette, basically. I would say Song of the Deep, which I think was published by GameStop. Actually,
it was.
It's a submarine Metroidvania where you're a little girl who builds a submarine and you go into the ocean to find your father who shipwrecked somewhere in the deep sea.
I liked it. It didn't stick with me. Like I bounced off it after a few hours, but it's a really well made, and it's It's a famous studio, isn't it? It's isn't it? Let's look this up because it is like someone you'd be like, wait, they made that?
It's
Warner Brothers. Insomniac.
Yeah,
let me just verify that.
Yep, it's Insomniac.
Really?
Yeah. So this is like literally the Spider-Man people. Yeah. Like made a sweet, pretty good Metroidvania.
Yeah. It was published by a game retailer.
Physically?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was there. You'd walk into stores. They even had merch for it. Yeah, it just didn't take.
I still have a little toy of the rickety submarine.
Mm.
Yeah. It was weird. Maybe you guys shouldn't have done this.
Yeah, all right.
With my least favorite part of the show, let's whittle this down.
I think probably the best approach this time around, maybe we go just do voting on each entry, mm-hmm. and the ones that get the fewest votes out of the four people here are going to get kicked.
Sure.
That's smart. Yeah. Mm.
Super Metroid, yay or nay? Yays. The yays have it. So that's 4 out of 4. Aria of Sorrow.
Yay.
Yay.
All right, that's a 4 out of 4. You know, we can't do this for all of them, gentlemen.
They're good games.
Yeah.
Pop, pop.
Yay.
Yay.
Yes. Vote. Brendan's a vote. Matt's abstaining.
3 out of 4. That's fine. It'll probably make the list. Oops, I accidentally put that in front of Shadow Complex.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Yeah. All right.
Oh. Chris, are you no?
I just want to make some controversy.
All right. Abstaining. What are you, like Marjorie Taylor Greene over here? Mm-hmm. Going to talk a lot of shit and then abstain? Cave Story.
Yeah. I'm going to vote for Cave Story. Sure. I like Cave Story. Just want to put it on record. I love Cave Story.
2 out of 4. Fucking see ya, Cave Story.
I think some of the other ones we have are better. But
agreed. Yeah, I'm not saying Cave Story is a bad game at all. Hollow Knight.
Big yay. I voted for everything so far. Jesus
2 out of 4. 2 out of 4.
All right.
Record of Lodoss War.
I think Hollow Knight has to be on the list.
Michael, so you're a 3 out of 4?
Yeah,
now?
Make
okay.
it 3 out of 4.
Okay. All right. Peer pressure. I see how it is. Little weak little bitch.
all right. I take it back. Enjoy not getting Hollow Knight on the list, fucker.
He used peer pressure to peer pressure you out of your vote,
which was to his benefit.
Oh. Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth.
Yes.
I'm leaving the show.
You should play it. You'd like it.
It's fucking awesome.
I don't think it's on Game Pass anymore,
but it was.
I like the Ikaruga description. I'd forgotten about that aspect of it until I remembered it. Guacamelee. On this list, man.
Yeah, I think there's better ones.
I do like Guacamelee, though. God damn it.
That's the thing, is I feel like if I'm just voting for the games that I've played and I like, I would vote for it, but when I'm looking at the rest, I'm like,
Alright, so here's the deal. We've got some locks. Super Metroid, Aria of Sorrow, locked. We have a couple 3 out of 4s that if we took... So we have one too many titles. If we took all the 3 out of 4s, that puts us at 6. So really, we gotta decide what we're booting out of the following strong ass lineup. Prince of Persia, whatever the fuck the subtitle of that game is.
The Lost Crown.
Shadow Complex, Hollow Knight, and Record of Lodoss War.
I think the first cut, in my opinion, would be Record of Lodoss War.
Yeah, that is. I love that game, but that is probably the weakest on this list.
Yeah,
as
I mean.
Because I really love that game.
Yeah. I would personally boot Hollow Knight, but I feel like it needs to be on this list as a modern representation.
Exactly. So. Like, it's too big. Like, if we grow a top 5 Metroidvanias, Hollow Knight's not on there. We look like assholes.
Here's a really dumb thing. I would boot Shadow Complex.
I was going to say that next.
Not because I don't like Shadow Complex, but Shadow Complex was kind of like a salve during a time where we did not have anything in this subgenre.
It also made the previous list.
It's still a fun game to play, but it's been surpassed.
Yeah, it's been. Yeah. There's plenty of other things that are better than Shadow Complex.
All right, so keep Lodoss War, boot Shadow Complex.
I'd get behind that.
Yeah, I'd take that from behind.
Yeah,
it's too late. The cursor's already moving. I'm doing it. Fuck off, Shadow Complex.
That's a solid top 5.
Yeah,
it is.
That was the top 5 that I envisioned. I'm not even kidding. That's the top 5 that I envisioned in my head when I was like,
Wait, I hate to tell you, we're only halfway done because now we have to put them in order, yeah. which is sometimes the
Super
harder
Metroid
part
number
of this.
One, Ariosaur number two.
I think does reversing to, the order that they're in right now on the page is probably the best way to go.
Like, but. Doesn't? Yeah, I feel like if you go from one to five, that looks solid to me.
It does. I like it.
All right. So you're proposing Super Metroid number one, Aria of Sorrow mm-hmm. number two, Pop mm-hmm. three, four Hollow Knight, five Record of Lodoss War.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
All right.
Hold on. Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit in the Wonder Labyrinth. Man, yes. Dude, no,
you added an extra the in there.
Sue the person who came up with that name.
Wonder Labyrinth. Yeah. Well, you know, Record of Lodoss War is such an interesting concept because it started off with somebody's like Dungeons and Dragons. I don't think it was straight D&D. I think it was like a knockoff. And so it started like just this group playing it, and they recorded their sessions and wrote them down as a book, like a script, and then that series got popular enough that it got turned into, I think, light novels, and then a manga and an anime, and now it's had like multiple video games since
it was the critical role of its era.
Exactly. Yeah.
Take it from someone who's played a lot of D&D. There's nothing straight about D&D, Michael.
You know what I meant.
I did. Fuck
not
it. Well,
gay
it's not official.
D&D. That's what
it's,
I meant.
It's not official until you bust out the numbering, my friend. So do you want to take right. us through the list
well,
of the
okay.
numbers?
Yeah, let's take it away. Our
number five.
Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth. So all right, I'm counting them down. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Number four.
Garama! Edina! Shaw! Shaw! Shaw!
Hollow Knight!
When's Silk Song coming? That's like
seriously.
Game announcement. The
trailer dropped on April 1st, I think.
Mm. It was
a perfect time to drop game trailers.
They put up like store pages, is what they did.
Oh, that's what they're really, well, yeah, store pages.
Tomorrow they'll all be gone, but they're still there.
Wasn't it originally supposed to be out by now? Like,
oh yeah, yes.
Yeah. They kind of made it imply that it was going to be out last year, but whatever.
Yeah. Fair. So our
number three.
I've drowned the Bahamut in the Caspian Sea. Cross the Hell Bridge of Shinvat for a bet. Crushed Hercules. No one sang about it. But you gave me the most glorious fight.
Prince of Persia, the Lost Crown.
Yes.
Yay, Sargon. Hooray.
I lost a crown once. That's really expensive and painful. You
don't
want
to do that. There's a hell to replace.
Number two.
Castlevania, Aria of Sorrow, not to be confused with Castlevania 2, which was also arguably a Metroidvania, but a much denser and less fun one. And finally, our
number one.
The last Metroid is in captivity. The galaxy is at peace.
Super Metroid.
if you want to give yourself a numero cero, you could have Guacamelee just for the Spanish thing, Michael.
Fine.
Number zero.
Guacamelee. I think that's actually like an Italian machine voice.
Yeah, that's a good list. Those are all great games. And I don't think we didn't mention a fucking bad game at all.
No.
I don't think even the ones that we were like, nah, not feeling like they're still amazing games.
Yeah.
It's hard to like find a game in this genre when it like achieves a certain level of notoriety that is like people are wrong about. Because they're just
A lot of design choices go behind these small games, which I think indies gravitate towards them because you can really show off to people who understand game design. But for sometimes as a player, they can be pretty obtuse. And like, this is like less fun than a side scroller. Oh my God, get to the fireworks factory. But I do love the Metroidvania. I really do.
Are there bad Metroidvanias? I guess there must be.
I don't know that I've played anything I would consider bad.
Yeah, I'm not going to like say that there are. I mean, I'm sure there are, right? I'm sure there's games that like were shat out and like not fun to play or whatever. But of the ones that I've played, you know, there are ones that I don't like as well. Like, I'm not as big on Time Splitters. Or not Time Splitters. I'm sorry. What is that one?
Time Skimmers, I want to say?
Something like that. It's like Symphony of the Night, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And then there's the one that's... There's the one that were like the girl with the wrench and all that. I don't know. Might also have the word time in it. See, they're just not memorable. That's the worst thing in this genre, is that they're not super memorable.
Time Spinner, that was it.
Time Spinner.
Yes, yes.
And I'm really like, usually like when I like something, the rest of the world is kind of with me, even my co-host. But I'm like, I am in a weird place with Ori. Like every time I load it up, like this got a 10 from reputable outlets. Like, this is just another one of these.
Yeah, it's not bad. For me, I just assume I haven't played far enough in to really for it to really click like, and there must to really see what's amazing.
Some story element I'm missing here that which I do hear is in there. It has a moving story element that isn't like, you know, save all the Draculas, don't let the planet blow up. It's going for something different.
It's more just that game, but with the highest production value you could possibly imagine. Sure. Like it's, you know. But it's not doing anything anything particularly new or different.
Yeah, but I remember it got tens, and I'm like, I'm dying for a good, innovative Metroidvania. I got it. I'm like, I don't get this. I don't get this at all. And I wanted to love it. And
You know what I like about it is when it's doing what it's doing right, it kind of almost can combine Splatformer elements, so it kind of mixes in some like Celeste mechanics with the Metroidvania stuff. Yeah. But
Chris, also, I think you just inadvertently named our future collaborative game project Save All the Draculas, Don't Let the Planet Blow Up.
I like that.
I would play a game with that title.
Save All the Draculas.
Save
I'm never funny on purpose.
Save All the Draculas, : Don't Let the Planet Blow Up.
Hell yeah.
All right, let's
all right, yeah, let's wind this down. Brendan, we're losing you for the second half once again. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brendan_LH. You can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/thecrawl, or you can read the stuff I write over on GameSpot.
All right, well, thank you again for joining us and helping to legitimize this silliness. On that note, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some new releases, some news, some other stuff, so stay tuned.
There was a bounty hunter in the depths of space, and she could easily combine your stupid ass with your face. Her name was Samus Aran, and she would destroy Metroids. When she wasn't totally pissed, she was extremely annoyed. She stood up to every challenge, no matter how ever demanding, and her courage was amazing, and her boobies were
what? Nothing. I was just saying that you're brave. Okay, hey, look over there. It's Crane.
Let's get scratching.
Would you like exclusive bonus podcast commentaries and more from the LaserTime crew? Then we strongly encourage you to support this show on patreon.com/lasertime. It supports not only this show, but all the rest of the LaserTime Network. You'll get commentaries, play games with the hosts, see exclusive videos first, and receive an uncut weekly ad-free podcast bonus time. Speaking of which, here's a quick taste.
We are going to be talking about the film from 1984 that I've watched the most number of times.
Oh.
No other film in 1984 have I watched and rewatched as many times as this film.
Not even Paris, Texas?
Not even Barton Fink?
Nope.
I think I'm sort of with you on this, because it's just one of my earliest memories. And I think, given our ages, 1984, I'm not asking to watch any movies. I don't know any movies exist, really. I have to be brought to one, or it has to be shown to me. And I think I have really specific memories of this was just brought to school.
Yeah.
I would have been 4 when the movie came out, so I think there's no way I'm in the theater, because it's Neverending Story is not a huge hit.
Yeah, listeners, we are talking about the 1984 film The Neverending Story.
Get Bonus Time, a weekly uncensored and commercial-free podcast every Tuesday, starting for just $5 on patreon.com/lasertime.
And welcome back to our second Brendan-less segment, where we're just going to dive right into... He had to return to his home planet. Suicide Squad got its season one.
Yes!
With the Joker.
This might be 2 weeks old, but that's okay, because it might take you that long to unlock the Joker if you're anything like me. So, like... where do I start? I don't dislike Suicide Squad. I actually, the moment to moment of that game gets really addicting. You sort of get into a groove. I'm doing things with my hands with like, and I'm playing as the easiest character. Like, I'm playing as Deadshot. Like, he's the easiest to control. His jetpacks and shit, like, it works. And the code I got, the version of the game I got, is like the Ultra Deluxe edition, which is, I was like, oh, I'm gonna go back in, I see the season started, I want to play as the Joker, I just want to see how that feels, how the voice actor does and stuff. Like, it's not Mark Hamill, so you know. So I went in thinking, well, of course I'm sure I'll have some sort of new currency I've never seen before that says, well, you as an ultra premium user, even though I had got a code, you get this for free. No, fuck to the no. I have the season pass for free. Not the season pass. I'm sorry. What's this called? Battle pass. The battle pass. You have to distinguish.
Yes, that means you can earn things.
You can earn things. Not the Joker. The Joker. You. If you get through the entire battle pass, which will take you a lot of grinding, a lot of time, it will, in theory, grant you enough of the premium currency to pay $10 worth of premium currency to unlock the Joker character.
Just play Helldivers, man.
I did both over the weekend.
I know. All these assholes, Matt and Michael played Helldivers at like
twice.
2 a.m. my time. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, you want to get on? Like, you fucking dicks.
The other way to unlock the Joker, I think it's still not confirmed, is with the season, it's like called like the Season of Fear. There's Scarecrow shit in here. Even though the whole Metropolis is overtaken with Joker decorations, there is a weird Scarecrow element as well. If you get to a certain... there's the Battle Pass, which you may or may not buy, that you grind shit out. Unlike other games where like the Battle Pass has the two tiers, like here's the free shit everybody earns, and then here's the premium shit, they actually just have two progression trees. One of them's tied to the Season of Fear. I think if you get to level 40... You are in the season ranking. You can then play a mission that I think grants you the Joker. I've played this game for 2 to 3 hours the past 4 nights, and I am about 3/4 of the way there. So all these online reports like, oh, it takes about 3 hours of grinding. That is fucking someone, I hate to call people out, that is someone regurgitating a press release that they did not actually play that long to unlock that shit. That shit is not true. If anyone's telling you 3 hours, they're fucking lying to your face. Maybe if you have like ultra optimized group, you're playing with your bros and you're all there. And it's like, no, if you're playing single player with me with the AI, 3 hours, I don't know how. No way. There's no fucking way.
See that funny story that Warner Brothers is eager to DMCA anyone tweeting leaks of characters and things when
that's
they tweet
the
a picture of it,
part
but
of
people have been hacking the game and playing as those characters for weeks.
That's the
unmanned,
other
and they're on the top
is,
of the leaderboards.
It's taken me this long to come fairly close to unlocking this character that I probably should have had with the version of the game I have, and yet there are motherfuckers on PC who have hacked it that are playing as not even just the Joker, other upcoming characters in the game with other skins and stuff, which is like...
They're on the leaderboards. You can find them.
I really dislike when games do this. So this is a premium game.
Mm-hmm.
I have the premium edition of that game. I believe this thing cost people $100 when they bought it. And I don't have that new character. And there's like 4 new characters coming total.
Yes, Matt is, by the way, not bitching that he didn't get this for free. He's just saying, like, I have the version that you should have paid the most
for. You would assume you would get that character for free. Instead, I get the right to grind for that character maybe faster than other people, but not really. Like, the easiest way to unlock the Joker at this point, they really want you to just give us $10 more. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, for a game that...
It's not a lot to ask. It's not.
It is if you have the super premium version or whatever, but also, like, this is a game...
If you already paid $100 for it.
If you paid $100, yes, that's a lot to ask. Sorry, yes.
It's also a game that Warner has admitted themselves is not doing so hot in terms of concurrent player numbers or whatever.
Oh, this you want to hear something frustrating? You were talking about it. I'm like, oh, it's on sale on PSN. I shall get this. The base game is not on sale. The Ultra Mega Edition is on sale to make it cheaper than the base game. But I don't want any of that shit. I just let me play the base game.
That's my other frustration is, so as I'm grinding through these two tiers of progression systems, almost none of the equipment I've gotten has been more powerful than what I ended the game with my level 30 character. So there's nothing worse than, like, just imagine playing Destiny for a good, well, 8 to 10 hours now with me with jumping back in the season and not getting one single item. You're like, oh, cool, this will enhance my build.
And to be clear, you're not doing things that you've never done before. These aren't new levels. These are just, you're just grinding through the game.
So the end game of Suicide Squad is on the open world map. There will be missions, and some of them are labeled, like, the way you can theoretically grind faster is some are like, hey, this is one, like, this is equal to your level. This mission's too easy for you. And then this one, it has like a number two next to it. It's like, yeah, this is going to earn you more rewards because it's going to be harder. Mm-hmm. Once you clear off those twos and ones, I think those are on a daily timer. You just have to grind regular shit after that. Then there's these things called excursions.
That's awful.
That take you into an instance where you have to go to a different open world map and you fight things in a pocket dimension. It's all just the same shit, though. It's really just a different way of getting to a place with a bunch of enemies and buildings and killing the enemies in the way they tell you to. And then that's, again, though,
that's the bulk of the game.
That is the game. That is that game. And I don't dislike the moment to moment. It's mindless fun. Mm-hmm. I'm just really annoyed with, like, you know what? If your game wasn't doing so hot, you had time. You could have adjusted your monetization mechanics, just sort of knowing that, being like, yeah, maybe with this game that's struggling, maybe the thing we shouldn't just have super harsh grinding and punish people, not punish, but, you know, not reward them for sticking around with this game. This doesn't feel like a course correction by any means to me. And it's a shame because it's like, hey, this is Rocksteady. The moment to moments really feels good. The game's fun. It's just this fucking frame. And this, I called it when I was like, this, it's just what this thing is built on. Just like the Avengers. There's no fixing that. It's just, this is how the game is designed and built.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, honestly, the thing that I was most interested in was like, is there a new story? And you said, no, not really.
No.
Nope. There's like one of those motion comic cutscenes that has the Joker doing some voiceover. It kicks you off. Oh, and one fun little thing that is a bug.
I bet you wonder where I came from.
Hey, that sounds just like it, but it's not. You sound better than the new guy they got. So one of the other bugs, every time I start up the game now, within the menu systems, if I accidentally go to this one menu branch on the menu system called the Nexus, it plays the same fucking set up voiceover text that you can't skip. Like, it's like, you remember how I mentioned there's actually 13 dimensional brainiacs? And I'm like, I've heard this 5 times now, and you won't let me skip this. Please fix this bug. Please fix this bug.
I gotta say, conversely, Helldivers, a game that was half the price of Suicide Squad, has constantly released new shit. New enemies, new objectives, new areas. Mm-hmm. They've asked for, like, they've released $10 war bonds. I've played it a lot, granted. I've never had to, I had to fork over $150 to make a war bond is, like, all new weapons,
it's a battle
boosters.
Pass, basically.
No, it's not even that. Because, like, it's so easy to unlock in the game, intentionally. And by the time the new war bond unlocks, I think it'll be $10. I have twice that just by playing the game. I won't pay a cent.
I'm convinced one of the worst traps that developers can fall into is any developer who traditionally has made AAA single player experiences is falling into the let's make a live service game trap. Mm-hmm. I can't think of one example, maybe other than Destiny, but remember, Destiny had a lot of failures before they pulled
it
out.
You know what I would bet? Like, I was the guy who bought the Arkham Knight. What was it? Season pass, like, because we're going to release new content every month. Is it going to be story content? Almost never. This month, it's a racetrack. For what? The horrible car? Oh, no. But, oh, it's got Danny DeVito Penguin stuff on it. I'm like,
oh,
okay. I'm
all
right with
it. Hold that thought for the news if you want to talk Arkham stuff. So anyway, Suicide Squad, it's still not a bad game.
The game looks fun. I want to play it. I don't know what to do just yet, and I'm not paying full price for it.
So, Chris, I have to ask, did you play the demo for Rugrats Adventures in Game?
No, you asked me that when I was recording a show with your wife right before this one, and no, I didn't. I was
downloaded, installed, did not play.
I played it, and the reason I ask is because it is a game made specifically for Chris Antista by people who are presumably Chris Antista.
This is true.
It is... it like blends the best parts of like Super Mario, Rescue Rangers. Like you can kind of feel the DNA of all these old favorite NES games, and it's what it is basically a high quality remake of an NES game that never existed.
Like that's the beautiful thing. They made an NES game that never existed with a property that should have had a good NES game in the later day.
And then they gave it, like, really beautiful, high-def, nicely animated sprites.
Yeah.
They basically made two versions of the same game that you can switch between at any time.
I've watched the gameplay, and it's like, there's nothing feels special about, like, the modern HD version. Like, no, it's this gorgeous NES-like that you made. Like, this is what we... you know what it was? When the Nicktoons came out, Ren and Stimpy stole everybody's thunder.
Oh, yeah.
And when the dust settled, like, not even 10 years later, 5 years later, Rugrats was the fucking champion. And never got a game on... Did it get a Super Nintendo game?
Rugrats Super NES era or NES? I remember it was
I'm pretty sure it got, like, they're a 91. GBA game.
They're 91.
So that would have been
16-bit cuspy.
Era. Yeah.
It's cuspy.
Yeah.
Because Ren and Stimpy got an NES game, but after the Super Nintendo game.
And this is based on original Rugrats, the look, not the reboot Rugrats that came out.
That shit's not canon.
But yeah, it is, and like I said, I played it a bit. It lets you switch between 8-bit and HD graphics and sound, so you can get like chiptune sounds if you like that better. But like you know, comparing it to Super Mario, like. A lot of the stuff is you're picking up stunned enemies so that you can throw them at bosses. There are like tiles of sand that you can just like hit the pickup button to dig through like you could in Super
Mario
2.
Do they have a voice acting in it?
I don't think so. At least not what I
mean. It wouldn't be NES appropriate.
Oh, that's one thing the Family Guy game has on this game.
Hey, you want to see me move my ass over there, Lois?
But yeah, like I was pleasantly surprised by this. I think it's being published by Limited Run Games.
Yeah,
I think
it's sold in a great NES box style box with slipcase.
But it's worth picking up free demo on Steam at the very least.
If you have Steam, check it out. And if you like old school games, it's really neat. Like I think like you said, maybe gameplay wise, it's nothing special with the HD graphics. But like those are really pretty HD graphics.
No, I don't disagree. Just it doesn't look like anything anybody couldn't make right now. Whereas the NES one, like I see like Jesus, it really looks, it's not one of those games that like we made 8-bit graphics. It's like, no, this looks like this is what the NES could handle.
Yes.
It's super authentic.
And I think, yes, they actually made an NES cart, so probably it's that version with the HD overlay. But yeah, it's pretty good. Check it out. But that brings us to
news. The Friday the 13th game was canceled again.
The fan one?
Yeah.
The fan one. Friday the 13th Resurrected was the fan mod that basically gets, I think it just gets the servers running or lets you run the game on private servers or something. But they got a letter from the company that owns the rights to... Well, they got a letter from Horror Inc. who owns the rights to the Friday the 13th film franchise. I wanted the reason I even
the rights to that are so fucked still.
I thought they got fixed. That's why I put this in the news.
They're not,
Chris,
they're
I,
not
save
quite
us.
Fixed. They got settled, but they're also like in appeal. So, like, long story short, the screenwriter who was commissioned to write the screenplay invented these characters. Sean Cunningham, the director, the guy who runs the franchise, like, no, I own the characters, and like, blah, blah, blah. No, law dictates this guy created these characters in a script. He owns them now. He owns the rights to them now. It could all be settled if they'll just split the split money. But they don't want to split money.
No,
and
it's money.
I guess, but here's the thing I've always been told. I have no better advice for you. Some money is better than zero money. And then that's before you include lawyers. Just take the some money, man. This isn't the biggest franchise in the world. And it's going to die if you argue over it to death.
Yeah, I've seen so many people retweeting this news with a picture of that fucking CEO character from Smiling Friends.
Yeah, the Smiling Friends episode. I almost tweeted you about that, messaged you about that, Michael. I've seen a billion clips from that episode. I went to my parents' house, like, surely I can watch this new episode of Smiling Friends on their Comcast account. No! I still can't see the news. I love Smiling Friends.
Yeah, somebody tweeted the whole thing, and then it got DMCA'd, and like,
well, oh, so it was like legit leaked then.
I guess I thought
that's
it was
what it looks like
legitimately because people are talking about fucking Gwimbley nonstop.
Lou.
I've never understood about this Friday the 13th thing. Is so remember Gun Interactive, who published it or made it, they had to like cancel development. This was meant to be a live game after 2 years. The game was popular. They had new modes and shit planned. So here's to Chris's point. Like, couldn't you? If you wanted to make money and you like money, yeah, whatever. You're working out the rights to who owns what. Set up a trust and be like, okay, well, all the money this game's making for the license, just put that in trust. Once we sort out the rights, we'll figure out how to divide this money up. In the meantime, let people make money versus nobody make any money. Because they're like, the only reason you would cancel a fan project like this is for some potential future deals you want to do once the rights get sorted out. Like, well, we want someone else to make the Friday the 13th game. Well, that ain't happening yet, so, like, fucking let someone make money in the meantime. I don't understand that.
Last I heard, LeBron James was attached to the making a new movie, which I don't believe will ever come to fruition, and the last Friday the 13th movie, was it 2010? 2010.
Wow.
2010.
And this fan project, by the way, wasn't making money, because the Gun already lost the rights, they delisted the thing. The fan project is just like, no, we just love this game and want a way to play the game, you know, and no one's, it wasn't for profit.
Right.
Everyone's getting paid.
That's the thing. It wasn't even a fan project. We're like, we made a Friday the 13th game and we didn't. No, we just let people play the game they already bought.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bummer. I just fucking someone figure this shit out, please. Friday the 13th was one of the most important. It's weird to say this. One of the most important franchises when we were growing up. Like it was. And as entertainment franchises go, didn't get any bigger in the horror space, certainly, but just overall franchises.
It's shocking, genuinely shocking to see how important it is to younger people. The young kids I talk to know and care about Jason Voorhees. And there's supposedly another Peacock series coming. They can't use the name Friday the 13th. I think it's called Return to Crystal Lake or something like that. Camp Crystal Lake.
Yeah, isn't it a prequel? Which
something like a horrible idea, like a prequel. Who cares?
Is that going to be interesting? A series set before the murders start?
You know how dumb the lore is in Friday the 13th before the fourth movie. It's dumb.
Does anyone really give a shit about Pamela Voorhees?
Yes. Get to the Tommy Jarvis of it all.
Exactly.
I mean, the closest thing we have to a modern day Jason Voorhees is that character from Shogun that has leprosy, Lord Ono. Like, he looks like when you unmask Jason Voorhees. You guys haven't seen the show.
I have. I think the Mountain from Game of Thrones is a more apt comparison.
That's a good person.
A huge fucked up guy who kills people and is just basically like a bear who will just disembowel anything in his reach.
The Mountain was definitely when Jason Voorhees was zombie Jason. Mm-hmm. Not Friday the 13th, two dude in a sack, a burlap sack.
They basically had to like, if you're not a patron, patreon.com/lasertime, we go through the whole series, but like, they had to decide what Jason wore permanently because they didn't want to do makeup in a highly lit environment required for the 3D of Friday the 13th 3D.
Hmm.
And then by Friday the 13th 6, Jason becomes like the immortal, you can't kill him character. It takes 6 fucking movies to get to that.
Is it 6 that they rip off like the James Bond intro where they have the cutaway where like Jason walks on screen with the targeting crosshairs, whatever?
I know it's not 8, and that that'd be way more appropriate in 8 because I hate that fucking movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember. But 6 is awesome.
Yeah.
But that's how long it takes for them to solidify Jason. 10 hours in 5 movies.
That's part of his mystique, is that you never really nailed down, because Jason's only the killer in like half of the original movies. Like it's usually someone else fucking Scooby doing that shit.
Yeah.
You know what else is awesome other than Friday the 13th? Star Wars.
Never heard of it.
Michael.
Star
Ubisoft
Wars.
Shill. This is the new Ubisoft Shill segment brought to you by Ubisoft.
Whatever. It's our most anticipated game of the year. I didn't get to see this stuff, but like a bunch of new information.
Talk to us about that story trailer, and then they revealed the release date. This is coming in August, right?
Yeah. They showed off more of the story with Cave S and the various syndicates. This is going to be diving into Star Wars, like the criminal underbelly of it, and you're going to be doing work for various criminal syndicates and managing your relationships with them, etc., etc.
It's the only ethical behavior you can conduct in the Star Wars universe under the Empire.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Crime.
Well, under the Empire, certainly, yeah.
There's a Game Informer cover that hit that reveals a lot of these details, and there are some, like, characters returning from other Star Wars stuff, so I'm probably saying her name wrong. Lady Kira, is she from Solo? Right, is fucking someone from Solo in this game?
There's like 16 R's. That, no, I don't know.
Is she and with the I Crimson Dawn? Then maybe
she is with the Crimson Dawn.
Hmm.
Played by Emilia Clarke. You ever heard of her?
Is that how you say having a period in Star Wars?
Jesus,
I'm sorry. No.
No. Crimson Dawn. Crimson Dawn's a crime syndicate. They appear in the game.
Minor game news for Star Wars tangentially. BD is one of my favorite game characters to come out of the Star Wars universe and kind of legitimized by showing up in Mandalorian. The BD units. Right. They just introduced them into the Disney parks. Did you see those?
No.
I heard about that.
Yeah, like remote control little BD units like that come up to your ankle that can, you know, they're clearly being remote controlled. I love Disney parks have constantly come up with robots, and like we came up with a 1-1 Wally. It will crush a toddler, so we can't use it.
Right.
But the BDs can walk around and not hurt anybody, and so there's like a bunch of BDs walking around. So if you like Jedi Fallen Order, BDs are walking around the Disney parks
the
now.
The tourists aren't like kicking them because of humanity's.
I think they
innate need to be mean to robots.
You should, have you both been to the Star, Batuu?
No.
Yes, I've been to Star Wars Land.
Yeah, they have a really interesting way of cordoning off people and bringing out, like, because they don't want you to touch Chewbacca, because everybody wants to.
Well, a lot of it's just they walk by you really fast. Like, Rey was just, like, passing, we saw her in passing, and she's like, come on, Chewie, we got to get to this thing, and it's just like a run by. I got kicked out, because I kept saying, BD's nuts!
Jesus. I'm not disappointed at all. That was great. It was all worth it. It was all worth bringing it up.
Worth it.
Sorry. But yeah, Star Wars Outlaws looks dope.
Yep.
New Age, Star Wars New Age Outlaws?
I mean,
that's
I assume
gonna be the
this
crossover
looks dope.
We all deserve. Talk to me about Pop Pop!
Pop Pop! All right. So, yes, another reveal this week was the Rogue Prince of Persia. Which is coming to us from Evil Empire, and it's a roguelite action platformer with a new take on the Prince of Persia. This one has a bola, like a necklace that was gifted to him when he was a baby, and so every time he dies, he is automatically, magically transported back to the last place in time where he was truly safe.
Is that what Hulk Hogan's last name means?
What?
Nothing. Matt's laughing. Bola. That's all I needed.
Yes, it's Terry Bolotai is actually his real name.
Terry Bollea, come on.
Oh, you got it.
Terry Bologna. Yeah. Come on.
Bologna. So, yes.
Now I'm offended.
But one cool thing that this does that really impressed me, actually, is so they wall running is a major mechanic. You can sprint up the sides of, you know, of walls, of, you know, going up to platforms. But also, there is a background layer. And if there is a wall in the background, you can run across it. You can run up it. You can jump, go into a wall run, jump out of it to reach a ledge. You can get behind enemies that way. And if there is no wall behind you, you can't wall run. So it took me a little bit playing this to realize, like, there are parts where there are holes in the wall where you'd want to be running across. And so you have to be mindful of that and try to avoid them, jump across them, because otherwise you'll just fall and you might not understand why.
Is this Lost Crown content? Or?
No, this is a new game with a new prince.
How did you not know that, Michael? There's a hole in the wall where the Prince of Persia falls. Everyone knows that old nursery. It's not even a nursery, right?
And the women don't care because they're wearing underwear.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But yeah, that is coming to Steam Early Access on May 14th.
Oh, shit.
What?
Yeah.
This
it's
is
right
quick.
Around the corner.
So this is roguelite. Mm-hmm. I know you can't say much. This is cool because, like, so pop.
I mean, go read my hands-on preview on news.ubisoft.com.
Keep your hands
yeah, but still,
off.
Like, they're releasing something and putting in the hands of Early Access. That's new for Ubisoft, isn't it?
Well, what's crazy is, like, so you guys just did a Metroidvania. I love just seeing, like, Prince of Persia. Let's try more. I'm not saying it's like Dead Cells, but if you think of Dead Cells as a model of a roguelike platformer game, like, yeah, that's cool that you guys are doing a roguelite platform, I guess, platformer. So that rules, man. Light. Notice I said light, not like. I don't want anyone who doesn't listen to this show complaining at me on social media. Next up, this shouldn't be too surprising if you've been following the saga of Xbox. So an internal memo from Xbox President Sarah Bond, I guess leaked, or it's an email, Windows Central verified to be the genuine article that basically talks about Xbox is working on a next-gen console. I feel like Phil Spencer has publicly confirmed this many times now, so that's not news. The part of this that's cool to me and is maybe newsworthy is there is also they are opening like a game preservation department at Xbox that is focused on just preserving the legacy of video games. It's a whole team just dedicated. So here's her quote. We have formed a new team dedicated to game preservation, important to all of us at Xbox and the industry itself. We are building on our strong history of delivering backwards compatibility to our players, and we remain committed to bringing forward the amazing library of Xbox games for future generations of players to enjoy. How much of this do you think is like, well, this is just the new name for the department doing backwards compat versus like the shit that like Frank Cifaldi does with game preservation?
Maybe, but it's still whatever it is a giant. It feels like a giant treat to gamers because, like, I'm not a big Xbox fanboy. I've been playing mostly on PlayStation the last few weeks. But the idea, PlayStation, you cannot play their old shit unless you subscribe to that PlayStation Premium tier, which is very confusing to this day. Because I just looked and, like, you can play Crisis Core Reunion on that thing. But only if you have that tier, like the highest, highest of three tiers.
Yeah, it's like their answer to Game Pass.
It used to be that was the middle
this
tier.
Their version of Game Pass is very confusing because you cannot play Crisis Core on Game Pass Extra or Essential. You can only play it on Premium.
Yeah, Premium is the answer to Game Pass.
No, the answer to Game Pass is Essential. That's Game Pass. What it included in that is like remasters and legacy stuff. Like, and so I balked at that because I got an annual subscription. Like, I don't want to play. I don't care to play Destruction Derby. I don't care. But like, I think that's where some of like The Last of Us remaster, you get that at the premium level and Ape Escape for PS1. It's very confusing.
It used to be that all of the classics, so anything like PS3 and before, was locked behind that premium tier, and Extra got you access to more games, but that's rare that like a newish game like that is locked behind premium. That's interesting.
Yes, but it's also like you know, we work in the games industry, and like part of what makes your IP valuable is the fact that they earn money over the course of years and decades. And Microsoft saying like, yeah, game like Game Pass Legacy, and like, wow. So there's a team of people ascribed to working on this, even though this will never make another legitimate dime for the company. So that's why I think it's like Xbox doesn't have the same kind of legacy as PlayStation, but they have even regular Game Pass, mm-hmm. Ninja Gaiden, Crimson Skies. Like you have the Halo games and the Master Chief Collection on there, and a team that maintains that. It's really, I don't know how it makes me like, I don't know how the games industry works. How does this make money for you? How long is this sustainable? And now they own Call of Duty, and they're going to be responsible for keeping every one of those games online forever. Holy shit, that's expensive.
And Blizzard, they own all the Blizzard stuff.
Yeah.
The company that, you know, most of their games are online. The question I asked is like, are they just focused on games that made it to Xbox platforms? Or do they have any interest in preserving stuff that maybe is just PC?
Or they acquired really through all their acquisitions. Preserving
PlayStation stuff. Like, yeah, how do you... I guess the true way to preserve games is getting source code. How do you do that if you didn't make the game? Like, typically people have to they have to opt into that stuff. And I think that's part of the problem, like, Frank Cifaldi has even had in his organization, like, the GameHistoryMuseum.org, or I think it is, like, not so many people... maybe even still have that source code around, you know, let alone want to offer it.
If you didn't put somebody in charge of preserving your source code, everybody left the company and their computer was wiped and they had no control over what happened. And it's not evil. It's not an oversight. It's just, if it's not someone's job to do this, yeah, right. Good on Microsoft. Like, this could be done better moving forward.
On the one hand, yeah, it's, I'm very excited that a huge multinational conglomerate with, mm-hmm. with the resources that a company like that has access to is now has a team dedicated to game preservation. On the other hand, they're only one part of the total video gaming story happening right now
right.
in the market. You know, so
right.
Yeah, but I we'll see how that part pans out. Again, this is all just stuff that leaked from internal, so we'll see how Xbox positions that and talks about it publicly, but
I want a job in game preservation, period. I would never work in the games industry again except in that field.
My dream job, or one of my dream jobs, I won't ever have it because it was taken for years and years and years by like one guy. There was a Disney archivist. Chris, you probably know his name.
Oh, shit. Is it Tony?
Dave. Oh.
Is it the Cell guy?
All he does is he just maintained Disney history, kind of ran a museum. You know, and like that shit is dope. I love when companies have the resources to do that. Fox used to have a resource library where when I was on the studio lot, we could go in, you could check out old shit, you could look at history stuff. It was kind of mini museum of like,
Fox probably had costumes and shit in there because that's part of the movie business. The props and the costume department are in the building.
Yeah. I mean, I love when Dave Smith was his name, was a Disney archivist for years and years and years and years, died in 2019. Yeah. But that shit is dope, and yeah, so I'm optimistic about this corporate announcement in terms of
It's so weird. Like 20 years ago, I wanted to be the loudest guy on the internet. Now, like, I want to be the librarian. Never talk to
me. Right. Never. And one of the reasons, check out this transition. Watch this fucking shit, boys. Take a step back. Step back. Speaking of game preservation,
it's okay.
The reason it's so important is for things like this leaked Nolanverse Batman game that came out. It came out this week. Some gameplay footage of this emerged. So this was a game that was tied in with the Nolanverse. It was being worked on by Monolith that WB decided not to put out because a little company called Rocksteady was working on some other Batman games that were doing pretty big business back in the day. that's interesting. That's cool. You know, that happens.
Yeah, people always forget there's a Batman Begins EA game.
Yeah.
With, like, Morgan Freeman's face in it.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a weird prototype for what they did.
It does. Arkham. It does a lot of things that Arkham did well.
Did much in better, I think. But yeah.
Much better, but like, but it in a much smaller scope. Mm.
So, and this was called Project Apollo internally there at Monolith. The rumor has it, according to DigiKnow Gaming, that Christopher Nolan himself might have killed it because he really wanted to focus on the movie, The Dark Knight Rises, the last movie in that trilogy. Here's the interesting part to me, though. Mm-hmm. Everything that they were prototyping and working on for this game, including a little something called the Nemesis system, eventually taken and used in Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor. So it's like, good game ideas never die, they just get reused, you know?
Yeah, Nolan is powerful enough, and it, on a corporate level, because I've worked at, you know, a big game company, I can see him saying, I have, as a director, I have so many things to turn over to so many people. I don't think he would have killed a video game. He just would have been like, I don't want part of my job being to deliver notes to this game studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like that they were developing things in conjunction with
And how Warner's his movie like, was we going. Don't need two Batman games. But it's funny because it was supposed to be like everything you know and love from Shadow of Mordor. It's like, yeah, there's some stealth mechanics. There's a combat system based on Arkham. If you're like me, and when you played Shadow of Mordor, you're like, man, this combat is reminiscent of the Arkham game.
Totally makes sense, though.
Holy shit, does a Nemesis system make way more sense with Batman's Rogue Gallery? How fucking cool would that have been? Because the Nemesis system was the coolest proprietary thing I've seen in, like, decades. And it was all like, brown orc, tan orc.
This brown orc is taking over this bigger brown orc, and it's like fucking.
Now imagine Penguin, like, Riddler.
Yeah, one of the
Riddler
Penguin's
remembers.
Henchmen is like, "Hey, fuck you, Penguin!" Like, what, Copper Pot?
Yeah. I'm the guy who beat up the Batman. Now I'm a themed villain.
Yeah, now I'm the Joker.
Uh-huh, exactly. I keep thinking, like, man, it disappoints me so much that Nemesis was patented and then not used for very much. Because I think I ran into something with Rise of the Ronin, actually, where, like, I got killed and it said Vendetta started. And I'm like, oh, are they going to do something like Nemesis? And, like, no, what they do is, like, you have
legally
to go back
no.
and you kill the guy who killed you, and then you get your karma back, which is, like, what you save up to level up.
Mm.
Get enough karma, you get a skill point.
But now, the ramifications for, like, a live single-player game on a Nemesis system... And really should have proliferated. Mm-hmm. Like, if you charge very little for it.
License that. Come on.
Because the other gameplay footage was like, every Batman game looks like the Nolanverse. And there did used to be a time where, like, there was a Batman game every 3 months anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, the good news is, the Monolith went off, they made the Mordor games, and now they've been long at work on that Wonder Woman game. So, like, they've got good chops for making these games. Just... It's been a while.
Yeah.
Time to see that Wonder Woman game in action. But yeah, I just love stories like this. Is the kind of shit, if you have an archivist or if you have someone keeping track of games history, that's like, oh yeah, remember that cool Mordor game? Yeah, that was going to be a really cool Batman game. And this is what happened. These are stories we seldom hear publicly.
It is. But like having worked in that, and I, like, all we wanted to do was make documentaries like, let's show you unmade, unfinished games. And, like, it was both seen as a corporate embarrassment and also, like, some of this proprietary stuff when another is going into another game. So we can't show you this yet. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a statute of limitations on that because I loved learning behind the scenes in movies when I was a little kid. I love learning behind the scenes in games now. And, like, that's... If I'm talking to people like, I don't know, my co-host... It's like the only content you can produce that nobody else can. Here's what we didn't make. And here's how far it got. And I wish Warner Brothers was better. The footage of the Nolanverse game is so choppy, and that may have been probably wasn't in development very long.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't optimized very well. But it'd be neat to see that now. Like, you could up-res that, and how would this look? Cool. Yeah. Release a free demo to promote a Batman game. Here's our canceled Batman game from 20 years ago, up-res.
Well, I guess it's Warner Brothers, so they wouldn't have to pay a licensing fee to themselves.
Right.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
No, just a little bit to Bob Kane and a tiny bit to Bill Finger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, mm-hmm. the only way that we ever get that info is either through that corporate lens of like a company yep. has decided mm-hmm. to release it, and obviously they have their spin and take on it, or it's a company that went defunct, and someone's like, well, I can yep. safely talk about this because there's no risk of getting sued, or mm-hmm. everyone who would have sued that person, if the company's still around, everyone is gone who would care. And so yeah. someone's like, ah, fuck it, I'm too old to care about this shit, and they'll leak
or
it.
Or someone leaks. Honestly, it's... I think there's a lot of... Like, game companies tend to be a bit sensitive about that stuff, partly because, like, well, we don't want to talk about the stuff, you know, that didn't make it into the game, because it might make it into a future game.
It's true.
That's, I think, totally valid, by the way.
It is.
I just to clarify, I actually have no patience for fucking leakers of, like, current corporate shit. You know what I mean? I love the historical stories, but if, like, it's a thing that's going on now, like...
That's such childish Elon Musk. I want instant clout for like.
Yep.
I hate that idea. I don't like leaks as in like someone stealing content that was never meant to be seen from another company. But another company embracing that and showing like, here's the thing we didn't make and how it informed the things we did make. Oh, very cool.
I love that. Well, yeah, because the thing it informed is out, is released. So.
Right. It's out there.
Yep. I love that stuff. Anyway, that is all the news that's fit to play or not because it was canceled. Who knows?
All right. Well, let's move on to the community segment, which is always a segmenting the community. Last week's
segment.
Question of the week. Inspired by Matt's shameless Sonic IHOP plug, what's your favorite video game promotional tie-in of all time, food brands, etc.? On Facebook, Joe Northrup says, so many Pokemon-related memories with Burger King. Whether it was the gold cards that came in metallic Pokeballs, the different fake Game Boys that had either 3D Pokemon in them, basic little ball-flinging games, or some other simple gimmick, it was always fun seeing what Poke Toy I was going to get.
I can't think of anything Burger King was more aggressively on at the good early adopter thing of a Simpsons and Pokemon. Simpsons and Pokemon, because like there still hasn't been any McDonald's Simpsons stuff. It's always been Burger King.
That's wild, because it's not even through like that Disney 100 Years of Disney thing where they had all those characters.
They had some Star Wars, and they had I think one Avatar character, but like E&E Frederick says, the Suntory potion bottles that were produced for Final Fantasy XII were pretty neat. A friend of mine got one sent from Japan so we could sample it. It had an unusual herby flavor that was pleasant, and the bottle made a nice decoration on the gaming shelf. All you need to be is a nice decoration, by the way. I don't want to taste anything involved
I love
with your
the
game.
Herbie movies that Disney made.
they do. Yes, Matt and I both love that because we like Blackbeard's Ghost, and after that, you'll never not want Dean Jones inside you.
Gross. I mean, he's a fucking handsome guy. I saw a smart car that had been painted to look like Herbie the Love Bug, and
there's that one that drives around San Francisco, and like sometimes, is this dude going to work in the 45 Herbie Love Bug?
Yeah.
Did
I say Herbie as if it was fucking
yes,
like a weed?
You weed car.
Nah, dude, I got you. Nah, dog.
My favorite musician, Herbie Hancock. Sorry, go ahead.
Film critic Kurt says, literally nothing can beat the time that Burger King literally made games for the Xbox 360 and they were surprisingly decent. Yeah, we talked about that. Sneak King and all that shit.
And again, this is mostly my memories. A, there were not any 360. I bought a 360 when Crackdown went to $30 because there was nothing on that system below $50.
Yeah.
That was right when they raised games to $60. And I was just like, I'm driving delivery and going to school. I can't afford this. Those games were $9. They're way better than $9 games. They really are.
I thought they were like $3.
They were $3 each.
Yeah, they were like $3.
You'd buy three for $9.
So all three were $9. Yeah.
But you had to buy some food, I think. You had to buy some food.
I thought it was like they were $5 each, and then if you bought all three, you got them for cheaper. I don't know, but it was very cheap. It was very cheap. This next one is so awesome. Someone read this next one.
KP Robin says from Blueski. KP skips Action Biker with Clumsy Colin. Is that a name?
Mm-hmm. I had to look this up. Okay. So read his answer.
Skips
and then
are great. Action Biker wasn't, but it was $199 in pounds. I played it on the Spectrum as a baffled 10-year-old and had no idea what was going on.
So I had to look this up. So this was a game that was a promotional game in the... It was 1985. Atari 8-bit family, Commodore, ZX Spectrum, all that stuff. KP Skips are like ZX a snack Skips. Brand, and their mascot was called Clumsy Colin. So the game just called Action Biker, but known in the UK as KP Skips Action Biker with Clumsy Colin, and it looks like it's a nice... Wait, hey guys... What perspective would you guess this game is shown in from the UK?
I'm gonna guess isometric.
Bingo, motherfucker! It's an isometric motorcycle racing type style game. I love. There's not many of these. Like we talked about Pepsi Man, right? But like Pepsi just Man. Fucking straight up advert games that.
Doritos Dash of Destruction.
I want to get this out here. I won a trivia competition a month ago, and I went back this week to try and reclaim my glory. And the trivia host is like,
"He went we're back talking to about, a hole to
we're talking about
glory.
Fast food mascots." And my girlfriend literally kicked over everyone's chairs and sent them to the bathroom. My boyfriend has this. Chris is going to get the fast food mascots.
Oh, okay.
And everyone I got, and then he was like, "Bojangles." What? I've only had that in like the fucking airport. Like Bojangles. Shit. What is the Bojangles mascot?
Isn't it a Mr. Bojangles song?
The guy from the Bob Dylan song.
I'm so mad just because like I thought the same thing too. Because like, why would you assume this should be something we all know? No, it's fucking Cuppy. Cuppy. It is a cup with googly eyes and feet. It is still sold in merchandise on the website. I'd never heard of it.
The name is Master Shake, not Cuppy.
Yes.
Yeah, you fucking stupid meatball. I'm going to fucking kill it. I can't do a good day to Schneider. No.
But
yeah.
Cuppy. I'm fucking so mad.
Jesus,
Cuppy.
It really is.
Hey, Cuppy, it's me, Tally. Let's go get high
It's literally just a fucking cup with googly eyes.
Cuppy! I lost a trivia contest. I won that the week before.
You guys might notice a trend in the next few entries. Apparently, my company, Sega, really liked to do these.
Well, they did. Like Sega in America was really, like... Again, Nintendo was super stingy with merch of any kind.
So let's see. A man riding a woman riding a motorbike says, Sonic 3, McDonald's Happy Meal toys.
Hell yeah.
We didn't get fast food often as a kid, so I had to live vicariously through a friend of mine who had a couple and let me borrow them. I just looked them up on eBay, and they looked terrible. They look like shit, but I'm still tempted to buy a set and gift it to that same friend. That would be an actually bomb-ass gift to your friend. You should do that.
I would do that now, because like getting full McDonald's toy sets, like they make me very happy. It was so easy to do on eBay 6 years ago. So not only, you know, stuff, everything skyrocketed after the pandemic, McDonald's isn't producing plastic toys anymore, period. Period. It'll never happen again. Yeah. I can't see Matt's face. Maybe he knows something I don't. But,
I mean, they just did for that Disney 100. It might all be
that was over. That was over 2 years ago. So everything else is like interactive or cardboard or recyclable. So they're not doing plastic toys. But plastic toys are what look cool on your shelf. Should kids care about that? Absolutely not. But that McDonald's toys are going to be different moving forward. Probably more sinister. Probably require your email and registration.
Yeah, probably.
Where they've been trending is they have that app where you...
Yep.
Even the toys themselves would like do things in the app. It's
every toy would be a weird amiibo.
We can just start offering digital rewards or Fortnite skins.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you about the McDonald's coupons in that app, man.
There are laws that cannot do reward stuff for kids.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Sean Kirkland says, when I was a kid and my dad was teaching at West Point, Sega had some kind of deal to make sure that the Genesis was the dominant system on base. They had a prime spot in the PX. Our community center had a huge Genesis library, and Sega sponsored our school's presidential fitness test. Leading up to the test, our gym teacher would play Sonic Boom when we practiced running the mile. Set from Sega Sonic CD. Every kid that could run the mile in under a certain time got a Sonic Boom CD with songs from Sonic CD and Sonic Spinball. I didn't win one, but my friend ended up with two, so he gave me his extra one.
That's pretty dope.
Sweet, yeah.
All I got was a fucking certificate with a fake Arnold signature on it for participating in the presidential challenge.
Thanks for not letting your girly tits drag beneath your feet. Yeah.
There was a thing that's all it measures is how long your arms are. You have to. You remember that where you would just put your feet on that box
and it was
measuring flexibility? And I'm like, yeah, but this is more just measuring your anatomy. Like certain people have longer arms.
But like, because I also went to church camp, and I think Sega had some deal with them too.
What? Where, church camp?
Well,
the Church of Sega, am I right?
All you have to do is watch Nick Arcade, and it's like, they'll never play a Mario game. Nintendo was very clear, like, no one gets our shit. GamePro never really talked about first-party Nintendo, and then Sega got to the American market, and it was like, whatever, Tommy Lasorda, Disney, we're going to make Spider-Man, we're going to make deals with all these Western companies. And that's how Sega infiltrated successfully the American market, by being more receptive than Nintendo to everything.
All of this is in Console Wars. Go read Console Wars. One of my coolest career moments, and I've been at this quite a while, folks, is I went to, it was like a Sega reunion, and I got to meet Tom Kalinske and a lot of the people featured in that book, and all those stories are legit, and like Chris said, like Sega had hustle. They had to hustle back in the day, because it was like, yeah, what are we going to do to make the Genesis big? And like, they would... Yeah,
everything Nintendo refused to do, Sega said, we'll do that.
Yeah. Console Wars is weird if you want to read a narrative. It's strange if you grew up as a Nintendo fan. Nintendo is basically the bad guy in this. Nintendo is the heavy. That's sort of a strange perspective.
I don't know if they're the bad guy, but whenever I read about... I've read two books about Studio Ghibli, and whenever I read about them closing, I know why. Because they've just refused to do anything with anybody. They won't fucking behave normally. And Sega, like, yeah, every market, everything Nintendo won't do that people are asking for, why don't we try and facilitate that?
Obviously it's because to make a compelling book that people want to read, you do want to kind of set up an underdog. And so it's not that Nintendo is necessarily the bad guy. It's just when you're on top, you don't have to
you
be
dictate
as
the
scrappy
rules.
As the underdog. The underdog gets to punch up.
I'm just saying that's how the book depicts it.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
And you know, I kind of think of it almost like a historical novel, just because it's like, yeah, you write this more like a novel story than like an account of real events.
Oh, there's dramatization. Like, yeah,
there's dramatization.
I compare it to Studio Ghibli because their principles will drive them out of business very soon. They will be a legacy company that doesn't make anything.
Nintendo? I don't think that's going to happen.
No. I said Studio Ghibli. Studio Ghibli.
Oh, yeah, okay, but you're comparing it to Nintendo.
I am, because they operate on the same principles. We get to operate on the parameters. We charge what we want for what we want, and we will not cooperate with any other company. And then Sega came in like, why don't we have Happy Meal toys for the things all the kids are talking about?
Nintendo Ghibli.
Did a lot of that stuff, but in Japan. Like, they were very open to brand cross-collaboration. Like, you know, Super Mario 2 came out of that. There were games about mayonnaise.
I walked Japan. Into a Walmart with my girl and her kid, and she's like, oh, Mario figure, it's on clearance. And, like, a Mario figure, period, is a fucking miracle from the first 20 years of my life. You could not buy a Mario figure for 20 years. 20 years! You could get Japanese imports, because Nintendo didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, my wife, now my ex, .bisky.social says, around Sonic 3, I can remember seeing Sonic everywhere, from t-shirts to a prize inside boxes of Cracker Jack. One I specifically remember being confused by was Sonic being on a roll of lifesavers. Was it because he was blue? No.
Oh, pineapple.
It was only later did I realize it was because they were rings.
Oh! All pineapple's a good move there.
Yeah, sure.
I remember I found that commercial online not too long ago. I love it. I love it so much.
And when you'd punch a kid that had a pack of them, they'd go flying everywhere.
I mean, like, I'm very much, like, off this show, like, questioning towards, like, consumer culture and all this shit, but, like, Mario and Sonic made me happy, and Sonic was really better about, like, giving me stuff to be happy about for, like, the first 15 years of my life. Like, why is Nintendo so stingy with, like, putting anything out?
It's not stinginess, it's just being careful, I think.
It's being careful.
Protective of their brand.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, like Michael said, they were not in Japan. He could do anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a video response from Cody Smith, who says,
how's it going, Video Game Apocalypse? Cody here, and when you guys were giving your answers for the question of the week, I was kind of worried that Matt was actually going to hit mine right on the head, but mine was actually one of the earlier Mountain Dew / Xbox promotions, and that was for the Mountain Dew Edition original Xbox. My brother, a childhood friend, and I all pooled our points to try and win enough points to win this Xbox, and I don't think we even ever figured out who would actually get to have the Xbox physically, so I don't honestly know what would have happened even if we had gotten enough points to win it. I've been keeping my eyes peeled for one, and honestly, like, if I could find it for a reasonable price, I definitely would like to buy one, but they're incredibly hard to find, so I'm just not keeping my hopes up too high. Anyways, thanks for the podcast, you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Cody.
Me and Chris did that with our Camel Bucks, and we had to split our time wearing that Camel Letterman's jacket. Half and half, baby.
I'm not going to lie. I know a man.
Okay.
I don't know his real name. I know him as Scooter, who took his whole family on a all-expenses-paid Vegas vacation trip through Camel Cash. He's still made fun of to this day because he would come up to you. Everyone was smoking in the mid, early, late 90s. Camel Cash? Camel Cash? You want your Camel Cash? Like, no, I don't want this less than $1. Holy shit. He took his family in a whole vacation.
Jesus Christ.
I would have just, like, I would have picked him. Take your Laszlo Holyfield ass out of here, guy, with your fucking Camel. Please, someone tell me they understand that reference.
They are all dead, by the way. I should say that. No, lung cancer, all of them.
Of course.
Okay. I'm almost relieved it was lung cancer. I thought you were going to go somewhere just dark, like, yeah, car accident. Nothing to do with smoking.
No. Car accidents aren't funny. But dying of lung cancer at the Camel Casino because of Camel Cash, hilarious.
died on the spot. Like,
which didn't happen, by the way. I died right underneath Joe Camel's balls. I mean, cheeks.
Actually, the symbolism.
You get absorbed into the balls. Yeah. It's wild. It's wild.
Become part of the camel. One with the camel. New question of the week. We had this debate format about the best Metroidvanias. What is your favorite Metroidvania? Now's your chance to tell us we're wrong and set the record straight.
That
with the
is
correct,
not what I want. What
the correct
I urge
Metroidvania.
In this. But what did we not talk about? Or what did we not talk about with the games we did talk about? Because it's not it's a subgenre. It's not a genre. It's not as big as we
platform
gamers might think it is, because you may have played 20 of them. Like, that's not big over the course of 40 years.
Yeah.
So I want to know what we missed, because, like, when I saw Matt's list, like, yeah, shit, I never thought of that as a Metroidvania. I was busy with other shit and, like, what is a Metroidvania? Is Dead Cells a Metroidvania? Oh, no. And, like, I had to, like, really think. So I know people are gonna, like, you coming up with Cave Story, someone's going to come up with that that equivalent for you.
Well, like, even just trying to look at Metroidvanias to find out, like, okay, which ones am I missing? Realizing, like, there's a lot that I know about but have never touched. Like, Ribby Robby, Sundered, it's just like...
It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. There's a whole galaxy of games that's like, no, I've heard good things about this. I've never actually touched it. It's totally outside of my expertise. So, yeah, tell us about a game that we didn't talk about. You know, inform us. Let us understand the wonder that we're missing out on.
Sure. And let us revel in the... 9 years that Metroid Prime 4 has taken to make.
Say, do we want to open it up to 3D entries? Because those are going to be some of the unexpected.
Everyone's just going to say Metroid Prime.
My favorite 3D Metroid other than Metroid Prime is Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, that's a great one. I don't know. When you said that, I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about this shit now. Because, like, Metroid Prime, you know, operates under Metroidvania rules. And fucking, what was I thinking of? Oh, shit, I lost it. A 3D game that operates under Metroid Prime principles or Metroidvania principles.
The 2013 Tomb Raider totally does that, where, like, as you acquire new guns, like, they each different kind of gun can eliminate certain obstacles.
Devil May Cry 4?
Was it?
I don't know. Nah. A lot of backtracking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could argue Darksiders is Zelda and Metroidvania mechanics kind of combined.
Well, like, Diana actually made the point, like, would the first Zelda count? I'm like, well, it does kind of fit the formula of, like, you get a tool and then that tool opens up new areas. Like, you get the raft and you can go to the...
I love hate that she can do that from being married to you.
Yep. Just picking all this stuff up by osmosis.
She's like, I don't know anything. Like, I think I'm done with the video game section in 302010. Like, actually, I know way too much about this game that I've never played because I've read about
it. You don't hear about that from, like, wrestling fans' wives.
Like, I don't even talk about game stuff much with her.
No, but Diana knows so much about games. It's incredible.
She has brothers, though. Maybe some of that's from the brothers growing up, right?
Metroidvania, because I know we missed some, because, like, I like tried to name as many as I could in my head, and, like, I don't feel this is interesting because I don't remember a lot about them, but I know I'm missing some.
Sounds like a good way to fall asleep. Just name as many Metroidvanias as you can.
Holy shit, yes.
Better than counting sheep.
Oh, and a sheep comes up. Actually, are you sure that's a Metroidvania?
Yeah.
And, like, you'll go sleep even faster.
Oh. All right. Well, let us know your favorite Metroidvanias that we didn't talk about. Go to the official LaserTime community on Facebook. There'll be a thread there where you can answer. Or ping us on Twitter, Blue Sky, or Threads at VG Apocalypse, and we will collect the answers and read them on next week's show.
I want to know what we missed, because I'm sure people will help us.
Yeah, let us know. Anyway, that's been our show. Let's go out with some plugs. Once again, look up Brendan The Crawl on YouTube.
The Crawl, baby! Metroid documentary, How Metroid Saved the Galaxy. Like, a really, really well-done documentary. Given that I'm sure Nintendo wouldn't talk to him. but I watched a little bit of it. Yeah, like, very, very good.
Yeah. What else have we got to push?
302010 and patreon.com/lasertime. We did the first... 302010 is about 3020 and 10 years ago, and JR's like, I want to talk about some stuff from the 70s. What about the 50 of 302010 and... Diana made a case for Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I was on this show talking about Jeff Minter's games. And, like, whenever I see Monty Python, it's like, I'm sure that was fun for the people who are around to see it. But this is not, does nothing for me, not unlike Jeff Minter's games.
I would never relate those two things.
Oh, but come on. No. Llama.
Monty Python movies I get, but, like, the show is so lo-fi and poorly mic'd and weird, it feels like it's from a different century.
It's part of its charm, really.
Well, like I said, I love watching documentaries that highlight the really funny parts with the context. But the movies, Holy Grail, like, I didn't even like. I liked Life of Brian. I liked Meaning of Life. And my eyes have been awakened. Excellent. And it's now on
Patreon. Because you found out Elvis was a fan.
It wasn't, you know what it was? Is that Netflix, whatever they did to bring it to Netflix, they cleaned it up. It doesn't look like it was shot on a camcorder anymore. It looks gorgeous. Like, I know it's a low-budget movie, but
beautiful. Are you sure you weren't, like, just watching VHS bootlegs or something?
I was watching on Comedy Central in 360p.
That movie, most Monty Python shit looks like when your TV is accidentally in that frames adding mode, like the true motion mode. Like, that's Monty Python. Also, the soundtrack sounds like someone just placed a needle on a record and started playing it. Like, all Monty...
What on earth were you guys watching? That's not my experience at all.
Matt is correct. That is what they scrapped most of their original soundtrack because, like, we want this to sound stock. So it has a stock soundtrack. When you watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I've heard this song a billion times in commercials because, like, it doesn't cost anything because it was effective. It's funnier to, like, hear a familiar song. They threw away a really beautiful soundtrack. We'll talk about it all on patreon.com/lasertime. And we talk about Neverending Story as well, one of my favorite movies of all time. And I fell back in love with Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It is 100% funny, nonstop. Yeah. And I'm saying that as, like, I'm a casual Monty Python fan.
It's also, like, I know Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I feel like, has been ruined, at least for me, yes. by idiots who yes. quote it nonstop.
Yes.
And, yeah, like, sure. but I feel like that's fallen off enough that it's easier to enjoy right. it now.
Right. When you see one of those jokes that's never quoted, I'm like, that's brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything that happens with Sir Robin is amazing.
Yes.
And no one quotes it.
But also, I knew a kid in middle school who quoted it incessantly for some reason. But I feel like it's one of those movies that you might not like the first time, partly because of the ending, which is infuriating. Ending. And then once you know what you're in for, it's fucking brilliant. It's amazing.
I think that's an older... There's no funny way to end this classic story
nope.
other than to subvert it.
Mm-hmm.
And
which they do wonderfully. But the first time, you're expecting, you know, a big epic fantasy ending, and you don't get that.
Yeah, I had a blast. And like, Netflix did this whole buying up all the Monty Python thing and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patreon.com/lasertime. I can't run a Steam like this on a plug.
All right.
Cool.
Well, as always, you can follow us on Twitter Threads and Besky at VG Apocalypse. Follow me personally at Wikiparaz, WikiParaz. That's been our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Piggyback rides, no one too bad. You're going up on the back.